live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee, Larravee Guitars presents two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And I'm Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in again tonight. As you know by now, the show is for all you songwriters and musicians and performers out there who are just trying to figure stuff out here in Music City.
That's right. We don't have any answers. We're out slinging songs during the day just like you, but we are able to find brilliant, talented people, bring them into the studio, and pick their brains.
That's true. Now, you can do that by going to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. You can chime in with your questions and comments there, and you can also hit us up on Twitter, @TheMusicRowShow.
Yeah, and listen, in case you haven't heard, Dish subscribers, you can now watch us on TV because the Blue Highways TV network is now on Dish.
Four times a week, actually, on Dish Network, Channel 73, all over the U.S. You can watch us four times a week, and for the first time ever, right here in Nashville, which we're pretty excited about.
We're very excited about that. Hey, we are in beautiful Ocean Springs, Mississippi right now, recording from the 5th annual Mississippi Songwriters Fest. Is that right, the 5th annual?
I believe it is.
It is. Wow. We're having a great time, and we're going to be visiting with BMI rep David Preston and hit songwriter Travis Meadows here in Hour 1.
Yeah, and then we're going to be talking with our friend and mega hit songwriter Tony Mullins in Hour 2.
So that's right.
Thrilled about that.
Well, let's get down to it. Hino, do the honors, would you?
Absolutely. Well, first off, we're sitting here with David Preston of BMI. He's the director of writer-publisher relations, over there at BMI Nashville, and he helps songwriters and publishers kind of do all the business stuff behind the scenes with their musical works and make sure that they get paid for what they do. Mm-hmm. And he also helps bring on new folks, new affiliates to BMI. So we're just thrilled to be able to say, David Preston, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yeah.
All right. Listen to that crowd go wild.
Woo-hoo! Thanks, Hino. I appreciate that.
We're really glad you're here, and I can't believe it's taken us this long to meet you. You know, it's
I'm hard to track down sometimes. You got to come catch up with me down in places like Mississippi.
No kidding.
Yeah, I'm not easy to catch.
Or Lynchburg, checking out someone's P.O. box. I don't know. Well, you give seminars all over the country. Let's kind of start at what are some of the more common misconceptions about a songwriting career that you see from beginners hoping to make a go at this business?
I think that a lot of what I deal with, you get writers that come to town, they get off the bus or the plane, and they walk in and they think that, you know, because they've been told by their parents or their teacher, their pastor, whatever, that they're the greatest in the world, and they think it's going to be easy.
Right. Sure.
And it's one of the hardest things I can imagine doing for a living. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got so much competition, and it's Nashville's a wonderful place. It's people are very friendly. Everybody is very supportive until it's, you know, your song versus my song.
Right.
And that's when things get serious.
Wow. So just the idea that, and I know I did. I came to town with, I don't mean to brag, but I had 4 songs written when I came to town.
Awesome.
And 3 of them, I'm sure. My mom said they were all big-time radio hits. So I came to
any
town
day
and
now.
I got here and I was like, you're welcome, Nashville. And oddly enough, nobody was that excited.
Yeah, and I think it's great because you do get, you know, the system is in place. I mean, we have a system at BMI where you can come in and you can meet with a rep.
Right.
And we'll listen to your songs and we'll help you sort of guide you through the town and through what it takes to sort of stick it out and make it in Nashville. And it's, you know, it's crazy because you don't really have, there really is no set way to make it, you know. Mm-hmm. There's no book you can go by to figure out how to make it as a songwriter and what, you know, the steps are.
Right.
You know, you just sort of show up and you have to figure it out on your own. And BMI, fortunately, we've got a great staff there that will meet with you. And we also have Jason Bloom does a workshop.
Right.
And so the Jason Bloom workshop is a great way to sort of improve your craft. But I think that a lot of what we're doing is helping sort of filter the real writers from the people that just, you know, broke up with their girlfriend and they wrote a song about it and they just want to play it for somebody.
What else rhymes with stitch?
Right. Right.
Or love.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're, BMI's been in business 75 years, and things are great there. We just reached the $1 billion revenue plateau.
Wow.
And I think it's
Is that all for you?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know it. No, we're a big not-for-profit. But, you know, we're thrilled. And I think the whole company is really excited about our new president, Mike O'Neill. Mm-hmm. He is he's brought a whole lot of new energy to the company. And I think that, you know, the morale couldn't be any better. You know, even at a time when we are faced with new competition from all, you know, parts of the globe.
Right.
And I think, you know, right now, as a young songwriter coming into Nashville, if you're looking for support and you're looking for a place to go where you can at least get in, you know, get in the door and talk to somebody and get pointed in the right direction, BMI is doing a great job.
I want to touch on one part of that, because when you say you'll meet with anybody or, you know, people can just walk in, you do have every day like from 10 to 12. Is that right?
Right.
People can just walk in and somebody will meet with them.
Right. And it's, you know, we it's an open door policy. I mean, that's what BMI was formed on, you know, it was founded on that basis. And mm-hmm. we've taken it to, you know, to its word. I mean,
right.
we really have an open door policy there. So it's, and it's working. And I think that, you know, a lot of what we deal with sometimes is just administrative stuff. People, you know, wanting to figure out their catalog or take a look at something, and that gives us time to sort of deal with that, because as executives at BMI, we're juggling a lot.
You know,
we have, BMI represents over 700,000 writers now.
Wow.
And, you know, just to deal with that volume of people takes a lot. You know, our phone rings constantly, but we have a good system in place to manage that. But we also want to never get away from what brought us, you know, and the one-on-one that that BMI was established, that, you know, my mom opened the office at BMI in 1958.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that. You kind of come from BMI royalty, I guess, as it were, or music business royalty, with your mom, Frances,
right,
Preston,
right,
who ran BMI for a long time.
Right, and she was actually the receptionist at WSM Radio back
then. Get
in the
out,
day.
Really?
Right.
Okay,
so,
how did she make it over to BMI then?
Well, she was just one of those go-getters, I guess, back in the day. And
yeah.
She, as the receptionist at WSM, you know, part of her job was to sort of oversee ticket sales at the Ryman for the Opry,
yeah,
since they own the Opry. There was a gentleman named Bob Burton, who was the president of BMI, that would come to town, that would want to get in backstage and meet the artist because he wanted to sign him to BMI.
Sure.
And he would call my mother, and she would get him in backstage, tell him what was going on, help him find a hotel, and, you know, basically help him while he was in town.
Yeah.
And when he decided to open an office in Nashville, of all people to choose to run the office, he picked her.
Wow. Yeah.
And, you know, it was a big shock. It was a huge shock to the people at the radio station. And they
probably other folks in the industry were kind of, why didn't he pick me?
Exactly. And I think that, you know, he saw something in her that, you know, obviously she was put on this earth to protect songwriters, to make songwriters feel important, and to help give them a home where they could be proud of their home. And I think that, you know, historically, when you look back at her career and what she did with BMI and building BMI, she was a remarkable woman on an international level.
Yeah.
You know, her knowledge of copyright and how it worked and how other countries could be involved and how, it worked for them. So it helped to build their systems so that they could help, you know, their artists and songwriters make a living and support them. You know, that's the base. You know, as an entrepreneur, as a songwriter, you don't have a whole lot of support. Most of the work's done, you know, in their basement or their office or their studio someplace hidden out someplace, you know, somewhere, and they don't see the light of day much, and they don't talk to human beings much, and you know, they're just always working away. And I think it's, and she understood that, and mm-hmm. she had a great way of sort of making them feel comfortable. And that's what we try to continue doing at BMI's office in Nashville and actually all over the country.
So obviously it was in your blood. I mean, you were kind of raised around that. So how did you then end up continuing that work?
My, I guess, you know, for me, my background was I got, you know, I grew up around music. Music was always my big love. I never was, you know, back in the day, I was never really a huge fan of sort of that country music of the 80s. I was, you know, I loved Willie and Waylon. Those were dear friends, and Chris Christopherson and those guys.
But that slick produced with the, what kind of keyboard was that?
Like a DX7.
That kind of country wasn't your bag?
That just wasn't my thing. I mean, I was, you know, I was living in Colorado listening to the Eagles and then doing that thing. And but when I moved back to Nashville in the 90s, and I ran across this band called Lone Star, and we hit it off. And I was, you know, I was just sort of in a position where I walked them in the door over at BMI, and I said, you know, you guys need to sign these boys up. And they did, and in the process was like, you know, we pay people to do this. You got to think about, you know, you're settling down and coming to work over here, which, you know, was kind of natural for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool, you know, Lone Star went on to, you know, Richie McDonald was the BMI Writer of the Year. And
yeah.
And John Rich, you know, he's had his huge success. He was with the band at the time. He's one of those guys that just keeps on rocking, you know.
He's tenacious. Writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's tenacious. Well, I will say that in the 8 years we've been on the air, we've heard your mama's name spoken with great reverence many times over the years. So, you know, she is still so highly regarded and revered in this area. So,
well,
that's something to be proud of.
Yeah, she's left her mark on Nashville and the entire music industry, I think. And you know, as I look back on it, I think, you know, there was a lot of sacrifice. I mean, we didn't see her much, her, you know, my brothers and myself. She wasn't around a whole lot, but when she was around, you know, you knew it.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
she was the supreme note writer. She would leave post-it notes everywhere. And she was pre-email. She was, you know, the email writer of the world.
There was no problem communication.
No. And when like she left you a note, by God,
it was like a to do kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And she, I would wake up with them plastered on my door.
Don't forget to do
right.
this, that, and the other.
And
thing.
I still find them. I mean, you know, anybody that works for her knows her signature and knows her, her famous notes.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
But you know, and it's amazing what, you know, she ever mastered email. Good God.
Really? My goodness. Well, you know, one of the more confusing decisions for a newer writer is figuring out, A, what a PRO is, and then which one to sign up for, because on the surface, they all seem pretty similar, yet they're all very different. I mean, what kind of advice do you give to folks how to pick one? I mean, obviously, you're with BMI, so that's the best, right?
Right.
But how do you go about figuring out which one is the best one for you?
Well, I think that, to me, I mean, you have to look at the organizations. You know, it's all about relationships, and it's all about finding someone that you can relate to. And somebody you can get on the phone, you know, at that critical point in your life. I mean, I think a lot of it is knowing when you need to sign up.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things you don't have to do right away. You know, when you're getting a cut, obviously, you're going to have something released. You want to definitely, you know, you have to pick one.
Sure.
You want to get paid. So I think that, you know, deciding which one is a matter of going around, you know, knocking on doors, visiting with the different performing rights organizations. You know, there's BMI, ASCAP, and CSAC. To me, you really sort of have to get a feel for what is comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
and really where you feel like you fit in. I mean, I remember one time there was a artist that I couldn't sign to BMI just because her manager didn't like our decor. It wasn't
really?
It wasn't modern enough, so he wanted to go somewhere a little more modern, which was fine.
That's a great decision.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean,
brilliant.
Criteria.
But it was, you know, but it's weird. People do things, you know, for different reasons, and I think, but really, for us, it's about having someone that you can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really have a set system in place where, you know, these are all my writers, and those are all your writers, and those are all her writers. I mean, it's kind of a big team situation there at BMI. We try to take care of everybody and cover, you know, if someone's available, you know, to cover for me, they'll do it, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a, you know, I don't have laid claim to any one writer or artist.
Okay. Well, but with 700,000, that would be tough to do. Anyway, yeah. Okay.
How are we doing?
You were doing good. Actually, we should probably go ahead and take a break. But we're here down at the Mississippi Songwriters Festival in beautiful Ocean Springs, Mississippi.
It is gorgeous here, by the way.
It is gorgeous. Yeah. It really is. We're having a great time. Scott and I are both playing a bunch of shows. And we're getting to sit down with folks like David Preston of BMI. And we're going to be right back with more of David here on the Music Row Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here at the Mississippi Songwriter Festival in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. Just having a killer time. We're here with David Preston with BMI, and I wanted to ask you talk about how important it is to be ready before you start setting up publisher meetings, because I think that's one of the things. You know, the PROs are great at making sure you get paid, but they're also great at being a sounding board before you start walking into places, I think.
Yeah, that's crucial. That's one of the biggest mistakes anybody can make coming into Nashville, writer or artist. I think that, you know, the way we work and the way the system's set up in Nashville, it's kind of like people will kind of label you. Mm-hmm. You know, you come in the door and they'll listen to your song and they'll kind of make a mental opinion about where you are as far as your writing ability, you know, whether you're a year out, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years.
You mean before you're ready?
Before you're ready, uh-huh. Right. And that's kind of, you know, how I feel, you know, the system is working out there. And it's, and you know, you get, and so you kind of label people mentally. You don't really, mm-hmm. you know, there's, like I said, there's no real system there, but you sort of listen to where they are in comparison to what you're hearing on the radio and what current hits are sounding like and what the hit writers are putting out right now. And you sort of compare somebody's songs to that. And it kind of gives you, for us in the industry, an idea of someone's ability and where their level is. And not to say that that's true for everybody. I mean, believe me, I've been wrong before, and I think a lot of people have. But
sure.
There's, it's tough. So you don't want to be sharing songs that, your demo's no good. The song's halfway written. You've got ideas that are scattered. You've got, it's a great song, and it would have been a great song on the radio, 20 years ago, but it's not current. Songs like, things like that we run up against. You know, there's tons of people that, bring us country music that really aren't into what's on the radio today, and they want to, they want things to be like they were 20, 30 years ago, and they, they're upset about it, and they just want to voice their opinion someplace. So we get a lot of that, but we also get people that are just, they're not serious about it, and they're not dedicated to being songwriters. And so we try to really help those people make life decisions, which is crazy because, we're just people at BMI, helping, we have our door open, and it's kind of like, hey, is there anything, do you have anything else going on, sir? You thought about law school. Yeah, so we do have that. We got a lot of people that actually have, sort of at the end of their career, and they've always been dabbling with songwriting, and they just want to share their songs with someone, and they, in the hopes that they've gotten a hit, and they think they've got a hit. And and there's a lot of that. Yeah, and there's a lot of people that are sort of, okay, this is going to be my second career songwriting, not realizing that, well, it's going to take you 10 years to get that meeting with that publisher at the rate you're going, so you need to stop now. And so, and with that said, I mean, songwriting is a great hobby. I mean, it's amazing, the people that just do it as a hobby and just to have fun, and with their friends and family and play their songs at their church or wherever, and that's wonderful. And we encourage that, and we think that that's an incredible thing. But if to really be competitive, to really go after Music Row, and to think that your songs can compete with the songwriters that are making it on Music Row right now, you better not put something out there before it's ready.
Right.
right.
Right. And so that's a great resource as far as a PRO, because you guys don't, you know, any PRO I've worked at or I've spent time with, nobody's ever minced words with me.
Right,
with
right.
Songs. It's like, you know, that might be 3 minutes too long. You know, maybe this.
But it's
be
only 3 minutes long.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's funny. So, what's the latest? Because I know all the different PROs are always out there negotiating and trying to get the best royalty deals for songwriters. What's the latest on the whole streaming basket of fun, you know?
Are we figuring that out yet?
Yeah, I think that, we're in the situation with Pandora. I mean, we won that lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And
what were the details on that? They were just because they were paying a low amount?
Right.
Okay.
They were paying a lower amount, and they, we went after them basically because they felt like they were in a situation, you know, they were smart people. You know, when they set up Pandora, they first came to us, and they were a free, it was a free service.
Right. Right. So why should we pay royalties? We're
right.
free.
So we gave them a license deal based on free, and then the next thing you know, we're selling advertising.
Right.
Okay, well, that's a whole different deal.
Sure.
So, you know, well, they're moving, they keep moving the target. And then, okay, well, now we're selling advertising, but we're also selling the subscription thing that if you don't want to listen to the advertising, we will we'll give you this deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, that's a whole different deal. And then, you know, it seems like, okay, well, then things heated up, and they go and buy a radio station. Well, they want a royalty rate that, you know, was equivalent to their radio station. So it's like, no, guys, it's really
because
not
it was just one radio station.
One radio station in North Dakota.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. So... Uh-huh. You know, which is smart. I mean, I think that they were, you know, they sort of planned this whole thing out, which made, you know, it was okay, you know, in that, well, it really wasn't okay. It was just, that's what they did. And they realized it was going to take a minute before the system caught up with them.
Right.
And they knew they had a cushion time where they were just going to be making money.
Right.
Yeah.
So the system caught up with them, but that's, you know, that's kind of our job. That's our job at BMI, is to catch up with the players out there. But you also have to realize, I mean, there's a lot of learning curve here. I mean, especially when you look at YouTube and the numbers. You know, you get so many writers that are coming in the door and they're going, oh my God, I had 14 million YouTube views on my song. I got $20.
Right, right.
You know, the big thing there is that, you know, it's a different deal. It's a one-to-one. You know, you got one guy out here watching your video, and it's not like you're being broadcast out here to, half a million people.
Right.
It's a totally different listening, and it's a totally different licensing issue in the way the system works. So you've got to really, you know, you've got to educate both parties, you know, us included. I mean, mm-hmm. we've got to look at this from the standpoint of, you know, the YouTube claims that they can't, well, obviously they have no control over who's posting what songs and who's posting what videos and how
right.
that's going up. And we understand that, but we also realize that they're making revenue, and it is way lopsided. So let's come up with something that's fair and equal, everybody can get, you know, can live with.
Mm-hmm.
That's our job. That's where we shine. We want to be in the middle bringing these parties together and making sure that our songwriters can make a living and making sure that they've got a number that they can live with, that everybody can live with, and they can keep doing what they're doing. I mean, we are in business to support creators, to make them make it able for them to make a living mm-hmm. as entrepreneurs. You know, we're kind of their back office. And we're the people that cover them, and we sort of got their back, and that's our job.
Well, so. And it's an extraordinary job in this day and age, because I think there were several decades where there was radio and venues and TV, mm-hmm. you know. And now, by the time you figure out how to get paid for one thing, well, no, the kids aren't using that anymore. Now they're on something
now
else.
Now there's a new thing, yeah.
And so you're constantly having to, I mean, not only take care of what's happening right now, but I imagine you must have people just out there, a think tank, trying to figure out what's coming.
Yeah, Periscope. Have you seen it?
Yep.
You know about
yes,
it?
Yes. He Periscoped 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, what are you doing?
Periscope and Meerkat, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. And I think that these are things, you know, they're whole new issues. And mm-hmm. they're And for us, I mean, it's a challenge. We've got people on our staff. We've got some of the brightest people in the world working at BMI, looking at these issues and trying to figure it out and trying to figure out how to license it, how the copyright law works. I mean, Napster, I remember the first time I heard the name Napster.
Right.
I thought, oh, my God, you know, the sky is falling. This is the end of the world. You know, and it did. I mean, you think about how long it took.
Oh, man.
The labels to get it together. And it's like everybody said, okay, who's in charge? You know, who's going to go after this? Who's going to, you know, it's not me. So we all, you know, everybody was caught off guard with that one. And now, you know, you've got, here comes Periscope, and you're going, you know, okay, who, this is totally going to, this is a big game changer.
And for people who are listening right now might not know what that is, Periscope and Meerkat are new services where you can stream live from your phone over the internet in real time. So, you know, you've got situations where you're, you know, let's say at a concert,
right,
and you've got 1,000 people all holding their phones up and broadcasting the concert live over the internet.
Right.
How do you, as a PRO, how do you even get your arms around that?
We're working on it.
Are you working on it? Okay.
We're working on it. Okay.
All right.
That's what I can tell you. But it's going to be interesting because it just brings a whole new set of problems and a whole new set of challenges for us to, you know, from a copyright standpoint, we want to protect our songwriters, and we don't,
sure,
you know, and this is like, oh my, you know, just when you, you know, you put out one fire, here comes another one.
Yeah. Right.
That's the challenge of our business. And, but we're, you know, we're up for the task too. I think that, you know, when you meet some of the people behind the curtain at BMI that are calling the shots and really looking at these issues, we're going to, you know, we're going to make sure that the songwriters are covered.
Well, thank you for being out there on the front lines for songwriters and creators. We appreciate that. Thank you for coming out here to this great hotel and joining us here at the festival. And we need to bring you back in and come join us in the studio sometime in Nashville.
Yeah, this is awesome, isn't it? Down here with the
it's wonderful.
This Ocean Springs, Mississippi location. I think these guys, you know, they. I met with these guys like, it seemed like 10 years ago to explain to them how a songwriter festival worked. I never thought that they would actually follow through and that they would, you know, get organized and they would get their venues and their sponsors and
they totally have and
make this thing happen like it has. And it's for me, it's really rewarding to be here just after, you know, remembering those conversations. They were mostly over the phone years ago where I said, you know, and they would call me back and say, okay, now explain this to me. Explain this to us. You know, how would you do this? And I come down here, and it just blows my mind that they actually listened and they actually have this thing going like they do. It's really, really phenomenal.
That's
it's
great.
Awesome.
Well, we're going to need to talk to you because I think we need to do the show live from the Key West Songwriters Festival.
I think we do.
Oh, yeah. So we're going to have to make that happen.
All right.
We're going to have to make that happen. But
rest up, then.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with Travis Meadows. Stick around. You're listening to the Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
Stone throw from Raymond Road, cold coke at the stop and go, Harleen half that hot.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
We're coming to you from the Mississippi Songwriters Festival down here in beautiful Ocean Springs, Mississippi. Having a great time. We just finished up with David Preston of BMI, and now we've got the great Travis Meadows joining us here right now. And Scott, why don't you go ahead and tell folks a little bit about him?
Okay. Travis, first off, I had a great lunch at, where was that? Aunt Jenny's?
Aunt Jenny's? It was good.
Yeah. They do this. I love any restaurant that when you say, and could instead of fries, can I have a side salad? They say, we don't got no salad here. That's my kind of restaurant right there.
Sweet potato, though.
They have the yam. But hey, Travis is one of those songwriters that really make the rest of us wonder what we're doing with our lives.
That's true.
Killer lines, melodies, just, we would hate you, but you're just a cool guy and you're nice and fun to hang out with, so we can't hate you. He's a nice guy to boot. He wrote the title track to Dierks Bentley's title last CD, Riser. Jake Owen's hit, What We Ain't Got, amongst many, many others. He's performing all over the country, and he's here in Mississippi with us. So it's a pleasure to say, Travis Meadows, nice to see you, man.
It's good to be here.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show.
Yeah.
How you been?
That actually, that applause felt a lot like all of my shows.
All two of us?
Really, yeah. Two people clapping, but that's feels
well,
very,
but
very
they
much
listened.
Yeah.
But they listened.
Yes. Or did they?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good, 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 good. Yeah. Well, I'm just curious, you know, you don't do a whole lot of festivals. You're kind of choosy about what festivals you do. Why Mississippi Songwriters Festival, and what do things like this do for you creatively?
Well, I'm from Mississippi, first of all, so that's the main
reason. So it's
reason.
Home.
Yeah, it's coming home, so it gives me a good excuse to come and put my feet on Mississippi dirt and drink a little Mississippi water. So that's probably the main thing, you know. On a creative level, I love to, you know, kind of run around and listen to the people. They have the guitars in corners everywhere, and they're
that's true.
Talking, you know, and thinking about lines, and they're singing, and I understand that they were up till 4 this morning. I did not make that part of it.
No.
But they're up there having a little jam and sharing songs, and that's exactly what I did when I moved to Nashville. You know, I did that in Mississippi for a long time, and I did not have a lot of friends that wrote songs, so I moved to Nashville, and I did all the open mics, everyone that they had there, It's a great feeling to kind of to watch people going through that process, and it kind of reminds me what it was like in the beginning when I moved to Nashville. And with it, you know, being the Mississippi Songwriters Festival, I get a twofer, you know.
Yeah, you get to come home too.
Well, speaking of home, Mississippi has this whole area just has a different kind of musical feel than other places I've been in. What are some of the earlier musical memories and influences for you growing up here?
It was interesting. I kind of went backwards because a lot of people, you know, with it being the birthplace of the blues, that's kind of one of the natural things that people gravitate to. That was not me. The first things that I gravitated to was rock and roll, and I think that may have been that I had some buddies in my neighborhood that were older than me. So, you know, we were listening to Kiss, and we were listening to REO Speedwagon and Thin Lizzy, and one of my buddies was a drummer, and I was so enamored by the drums, I got a kit, and so that was my first instrument, and the first song I ever learned was Detroit Rock City, and the second
there
one was Jailbreak by Thin Lizzy,
mm-hmm.
and then as I got older, I discovered the blues, and really enjoyed that. I picked up a harmonica because I got tired of, they'd sneak me in the back of some of these honky-tonks in town when I was 16 years old. I wasn't old enough to be in there, and they would open the back door, and I'd come in and play drums. But I got tired of being the first one there and the last one out. It's a lot of work, yeah. And I know the lights make me look bigger, but I'm not a big guy. So then I picked up the harmonica, and I started playing harmonica and playing the blues, and then I discovered later when I was 21, kind of late, a late bloomer, around 21, I discovered the Neil Youngs and the James Taylors and the singer-songwriter guys and the Dillons and Springsteen, which is probably one of my favorite ones. And there was a lot of local music, but I remember Steve Forbert was from here. He had a big impact, you know, kind of rooting for a homeboy to do well, and you know, he never got the wings that he probably should have, but. But it was fun rooting for, of course, yeah, there's a lot of Mississippi artists, and you always pull for the home team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you put on a great show, and we've all, I'm just curious, because we've all been in the situation where you've got a loud or inattentive audience, and you kind of got to overcome that. What are some tips that you've kind of gathered over the years for dealing with that kind of thing?
Carry a gun. you can always use the threat of force. That works pretty good. It's funny because sometimes the songs themselves will just win. Mm-hmm. And then there are some audiences that just do not care. They did not come to see you. They came to get drunk and, you know,
sure.
Meet members of the opposite sex. Maybe the same sex. You know, we're living in it.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Exactly. I absolutely agree. But it's great. It's great for my ego because we do have a lot. We are so fortunate at this point in my career. That people do come to hear the songs, and I feel so fortunate. But then there are that handful, and it is a small handful. But when they do come, A, they're great for my ego. B, they're I call them kind of practice gigs, because when you can still maintain and still kind of do your thing when they're talking over you, mm-hmm. And we've been in situations where it was so loud we couldn't even hear it in the monitors. And then when all else fails and you just cannot get past the ego killing part of it, which, you know, we writers and artists are just what a cruel joke to play.
To make such sensitive
people,
right?
And but that's where the art comes from. And when all else fails, try comedy. You know, I they're not going to laugh. I'm talking about just try to get yourself through the evening.
Okay,
I cannot tell you how many times I've sat there and when I knew they were gone and they were not coming back. I'll start going. I wrote this next song with Johnny Cash, and I'll wait. I said I wrote this song with Johnny Cash. After he was dead. Right after I got out of prison. For shooting a man. In the face. Just trying to get anybody to look.
And
you
say,
know.
Wait, what did he say?
Yeah.
Nope.
And they never do. Once they're that far gone, they never look. So it's just entertaining to me.
Start putting nursery rhymes to music and just, you know, just
yeah,
there you
who
go.
Cares. Anything, just get through the night. And if you're lucky, get enough for a motel room and gas to pull you getting to the next gig.
Wow.
Well, listen, we'd love a song, and we promise to listen and
absolutely.
And totally.
Well, I do have my gun on me.
Oh, okay, sweet. Good. I'll keep my Facebooking to a minimum.
We all want what we ain't got. Our favorite doors are always locked. On a higher hill with a taller top. We all want what we ain't got. We ain't happy where we are. There's greener grass in the neighbor's yard. A bigger house and a faster car. We ain't happy where we are. All I want is what I have. I'd trade it all just to get her back. She's moving on, but I guess I'm not. We all want what we ain't got. We all wish that it didn't hurt. When you try your best, but it doesn't work. Goodbye is such a painful word. We all wish it didn't hurt. All I want is what I had. I'd trade it all just to get her back. She's moving on, but I guess I'm not. We all want what we ain't got. Oh. All I want is what I have. I'd trade it all just to get her back. She's moving on, but I guess I'm not. We all want what we ain't got. Yeah, I wanted the world till my whole world stopped. Love like that ain't easily forgot. I guess we all want what we ain't got. Yeah, we all want what we ain't got.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back with a little bit more of Travis Meadows here on the Music Row Show, so come on back.
Well, his name was Toy, but we called him Dadlie. Dadlie's second wife.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here at the Mississippi Songwriters Festival, and we're hanging out with Travis Meadows right now. He just plays a great song. And
I was kind of curious, if you will, because, you know, a lot of people listen to the show or folks that want to come here and try to make a stab at this business.
Right.
Talk about the right way and the wrong way to make an impression when you first come to town. I mean, how, you know, looking back at when you came to town, how do you think you presented yourself when you were starting out?
Well, A, I was scared to death because I was making such a transitional move. And B, to combat that, I stayed drunk all the time. So I don't remember a lot of it. I do know that when I came to town, I had three publishing meetings, and the first two went so bad that I did not go to the third one. So I was obviously doing something terribly wrong. And I just started playing all the open mics and all the, you know, the writers' nights around town, and started bumping into some friends that I wound up being great writers with. It's weird because, honestly, I think one of the key things that really happened with me, and where a significant change took place, was post Uncle Buzzy, after doing that record, there was so much of me that could care less. I didn't have anything else to prove.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds, because I had zero success. So you have to put these in order. I had zero success, but I did not. I felt in my head, I guess I was so down, beat up, so down, you know, so far down that I didn't have anything to prove, and my confidence went through the roof. I didn't have the fear associated with trying to impress anybody, and I just started writing songs that I loved and trying to become the most honest representation of me, because I'd spent a lot of years being really uncomfortable in this skin, and I'm as close as I've ever been, you know, to being comfortable in this skin now. And part of that was just not, we want people to like us, and we want people to like our songs, but I think we sometimes overcompensate and try to write, like, you know, I try to write something that I hope you like.
Right.
That's a mistake. Write something that you love, and I hope you like it.
Right.
You know, that's when the big difference happened for me, was, you know,
that's what they mean when they say write true to your, be true to your own,
yeah,
muse or your own
and
art.
And it's hard. It's hard to find that place. And it's because we're all trying to find our voice. And for the lucky few, once we find our voice, then we got to figure out what we want to say with it. You know,
right.
I mean, I'm 50 years old. I spent 40 years looking for my voice. So we're not talking about, you know, a overnight success, what little success there is. But, I mean, this was a long, painful process.
Hmm. Well, you do, in addition to performing out, you know, on stages like around here, you do a lot of house concerts, don't you?
I do a lot of those, yeah.
How do you adjust your performing and your, just how you put on a show for such an intimate setting?
I don't change anything ever. I do the same show if I'm in a senior citizen's home, or if I'm in a, I do a lot of recovery places. You know, I've been sober for 5 years. I do a lot of treatment centers, and I do bars, and I do a handful of festivals, and I do the exact same thing everywhere I go.
Okay.
It's quite self-indulgent, to be honest with you. it's pretty self-indulgent. I sing my favorite songs, and occasionally somebody will yell, you know, a request from the audience, and sometimes I'll play those because I'm flattered that they want to hear them. But it's pretty, I sit there, you know, for an hour and a half or 2 hours and talk about myself and sing my songs. It's
right.
Freaking awesome.
That does sound awesome.
Well, yeah. Would you indulge us with one more song?
I'd love to.
Excellent.
I came to town to make a difference. I had a story to tell. I told it loud, but my opinion didn't go over so well. Waiting for offers, they never came. But the Davidson County Police know my name. Yeah, I played in dive bars, forgettable clubs. I wrote songs that nobody heard. And I sold guitars for watered-down drugs. I rode all the way to the curb. If dumb makes you famous, I can't complain.
The Davidson County Police know my name. Yeah, I'm coming to terms with myself. Almost comfortable in my own skin. We all stumbled on this side of hell. Hell, I might just do it again, but I've got no reason to be ashamed. The Davidson County Police know my name. Yeah, I've got more stories, I've got more music, I've got more songs I can sing, and I've got more faith now and patience to use it, with the past and the cracks in between. I'm partially broken, with parts of me sane. And the Davidson County Police know my name. Yeah, I'm coming to terms with myself. Almost comfortable in my own skin. We all stumble on this side of hell. Hell, I might just do it again, but I've got no reason to be ashamed. The Davidson County Police know my name. Yeah, I'm coming to terms with myself. Almost comfortable in my own skin. We all stumble on this side of hell. Hell, I might just do it again, but I've got no reason to be ashamed. I live for the moments while moments remain. I roll with the punches, I'm numb to the pain. I cry for the prisoners still tied to their chains. And the Davidson County Police know my name. And the Williamson County Police know my name. And the Magnolia County Police know my name.
Yeah!
Just like that.
Woo. All right.
I always feel so funny after people clap. I feel like they're endorsing.
Yeah,
behavior.
Yeah, really.
Woo-hoo! You went to jail.
This is awesome. You went to jail. This is great.
Oh, man. So you played this song in standard tuning, and the last song you played was in an alternate tuning. How many guitars do you take on stage with you to accommodate all that?
At least two. Oddly enough, I reacquainted myself with my old friend, the open G tuning, that I'm getting ready for a new record on. And so now it looks like I'm going to have to travel with at least three guitars. The only thing, you know, that's left is I would like to make enough money where I could afford, you know, one of those little men that will walk your guitar out to you and put it on like the big guys have. It's just me. I turn
just
around
hand it
and
to
actually
you.
Get my guitar yeah. and put it on. But.
So it's a retuning during a show. That's not so good. You got to have them.
We've been doing quite a bit of fly dates lately, I've only been taking one guitar on that, and so I'm either just going to have to figure out a way to pay more and take two guitars. Because, it only takes about 30 seconds, but it feels like
forever.
3.5 hours yeah. to me. And I try to tell jokes, and I can't talk and tune at the same time. I can play drums and chew gum in different meters, but I cannot talk and tune at the same time. Uh-huh. That's the weirdest thing.
We all need to know our limits.
Yes, well, that's mine.
Right there.
Totally mine, yeah.
There you go. Well, this has been amazing. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And when you get the new album, you got to come back to the studio and let's do a full hour.
I would love that. It's going to be a great record.
And you got a projected release date yet? Or
no, you know what? We were actually supposed to be in there recording right now, but there was some kind of top secret project that happened at the studio, and I got bumped for it. So we just kind of, and I wasn't quite ready. You know, I quit writing songs for Nashville artists per se. I just make my records these days. It's such a relief to take that approach in my career. But we're basically looking at the cold months, maybe January, February, record and have some kind of a spring release.
Awesome.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Sounds good. Well, we'll look forward to having you back at that point.
Where do we find you online?
TravisMeadows.com. That's one-stop shopping.
There you go.
Right. All your social stuff, everything's there. TravisMeadows.com. Yep. Well, we've got another great hour of the show coming up.
We've got the
great Tony Mullins going to be joining us here in just a few minutes here on the Music Row Show. We're down at the Mississippi Songwriters Festival, and we'd love it if you came right back in just a few minutes. Strong heart.